This is the Superhuman Channel, where brawn and brains finally meet. The following paid program does not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of the staff and management of Tri-Scepter Productions or the Superhuman Channel. Tri-Scepter Productions and the Superhuman Channel are not responsible for any claims, warranties, or guarantees made during this program.
Prepare to experience the strongest radio allowable by law. Secrets will be revealed. Myths dispelled.
From the Studio Gym, where excuses never apply.
It's Superhuman Radio with your host, Carl Lenore.
Hey, welcome back. It's the beginning of a new week here at the Superhuman Radio Station. And we're going to start the week off with two very, very important interviews. During the first hour, we will be speaking with Dr. Jack Wang from Brookhaven National Labs about the addictive qualities of obesity. Later in the show, we're going to have Dr. Randy Thompson on from St. Luke's Mid-America Heart Institute to talk about atherosclerosis. Is it something new, or have we seen it before when they have done research on over 4,000 years of primitive and ancient populations? We will discover whether or not atherosclerosis was prevalent back then as well. We'll get started right away with Dr. Wang. How are you, Dr. Wang?
Very good, thank you.
Okay, so those who are dealing with obesity, or maybe even becoming obese, many people say, well, you know, it's just about self-control. You need to make these choices and so on. But there's more going on in this, the etiology of obesity, is there not, when we talk about brain chemistry?
You are right. In the beginning, it happened maybe in part related to our genetic vulnerability. So some of the people, they are more likely to become obese, but not everybody. So this also involved with that environment.
Right.
So, yeah.
Well, the propensity to become obese is actually a genetic safeguard, is it not? One would think that in primitive times, where maybe food was scarce, the body's ability to store body fat was actually seen as a genetic gift. Am I correct about that?
You are right. Exactly. We need to overeat a little bit in order to help us to survive in difficult times, especially in the winter. And in a famine, that situation, so overeating is helping us to store more energy in the body to prepare for emergency.
Well, but not only overeating, the obese individual is much more efficient at manufacturing body fat than the non-obese individual, for instance. So it's not. It probably could even be seen as perhaps a polymorphism that may harken back to that person's ancestors being exposed to extreme winters, famine, scarcity of food, environmental factors in their genetic code. Is that a fair assumption?
Yeah, right. But remember that we human, one of the very, very successful species in the world that we spread around the world in different environment.
Right.
Some people in the more extreme weather, some are in a warmer climate. So that make us genetic profile a little bit different among individuals.
Well, and that's my point. Is it fair to assume, or is it dangerous to assume this? But is it fair to assume that individuals who have the genetic makeup in order to be more efficient at turning everything that they eat into body fat may have in more recent ancestral times that they have already been exposed to these extreme winters where maybe there's only four or five months out of the year where you could actually eat, and or they may have famine in their recent past, in their recent past ancestral genetic makeup. Is it fair to think that people who easily become obese have these mechanisms that are really were designed to help their prehistoric or their historical ancestors, but now are not efficient because food is in such abundance?
Well, you are right again. But one thing that we have to be careful about is distinction. Because in the past, that you are right, we need to eat, make a person to build a lot of fat in the body, but that kind of fat maybe is a little different from that currently we are discussing in the modern time, the obesity, because that the food quality is different.
Yeah.
And that so the distribution of the fat also different. So that it make the thing a little bit complicated.
Okay, and I want to come back to distribution of fat a little bit later in the interview. I'd like to start to move forward a little bit and start to explore the addictive quality of obesity and start talking about brain chemistry. So do we see a lot of the similar brain chemistry that we see in individuals who become addicted to drugs or alcohol in the obese person as well?
Yes, that's what we observe in our brain imaging studies.
I was obese at one time, Dr. Wang. I was over 330 yeah. pounds. I was Ooh. Not obese my entire life, but later in life, raising children and poor food choices, lack of activity and so on led me to a very, very obese point. I replaced my desire for food with exercise. And I actually became, to some people, they felt I had become a zealot. Was I not just replacing one addictive stimuli with another addictive stimuli, perhaps the exercise, released beta endorphins and fed my brain maybe certain neurotransmitters like dopamine and so on. So I just replaced one addiction with another?
Well, you mentioned that the exercise, people would consider that it's a good habit, but some people is in a very extreme situation. Nobody's current now to say that it's addicted to exercise. Remember that addiction is a very extreme form of the habit formation. Actually, addiction is kind of habit. So if the person into the extreme and people in the scientific field call that is addiction.
Well,
and so exercise, yes.
Well, I remember from psychology in college that addiction has the ability to interfere with a person's life or put them at unneeded risk in pursuit of their addiction. There are those, and myself included, at a point in my life where I was fighting against obesity, that I would say that I was addicted to exercise because if work got in the way, I would cancel appointments to get to the gym. I became very, very rigid and inflexible to, I had to stay with my dietary standards. I would not stay with the dietary standards of my family at the time. And there are those who would say that I became, and that's why I use the word zealot. I feel that it was later on in life that I learned to be more balanced, but in the early stages, in order for me to reverse obesity, I had to become very extreme in this new discipline, and it did have some addictive qualities, in my opinion. It made me feel good. I did alter my lifestyle, and there were times where I injured myself. Clearly, that could be taken away as putting myself at unnecessary risk.
Well, yeah, you are into the point. It's very interesting that, however, that is more on a reversible state.
Yes.
In the addiction is a lot of time we are talking about is almost into an irreversible state. And that is the danger part of the addiction. And that in the one you mentioned about obesity, that a lot of obese individual, especially extreme, we are talking about morbidly obese person, they are into the irreversible state, and then that is very, very difficult to help them pull out. And that is more than a habit. It is become, we call that addiction.
Right.
So if the person still reversible and that in some part is very close to the addicted state, then that if under most of time people cannot help themselves, they need a professional to help them to pull themselves out of that state. And that is good that you are a very good example, aren't you? You are supposed to be the model for the people to learn from you is that how to replace, good habits into, with the bad habits. So that is, and I really appreciate that you mentioned your own personal history. That is very amazing.
Well, you know, and you know what's really funny, and we're going to take a commercial break. I did an interview with a scientist from the UK about 3 years ago who looked at the number of life-threatening events it took for a person to alter a behavior that was certainly causing disease and or death. So like cigarette smoking, for instance. They looked at the number of people who smoked. They were diagnosed with cancer. They beat the cancer and they went back and started smoking again. They looked and the average person requires 3 life-threatening events before they actually alter their and correct the at-risk behavior. But for me, it was 1. I was diagnosed with a heart problem and the doctor told me that I was surely going to succumb to this heart problem sometime in the future. And that one event was all it took for me to say, I don't want to die young. I want to live longer. And I'm going to do something about it. But what we find is that sometimes it takes most people multiple life-threatening events before they make the decision to find a way out. And this pertains to obesity as well. And that's why when we come back, I want to start talking about neurotransmitters like dopamine and serotonin and so on. We're talking this hour with Dr. Gene Jack Wang. He's with the Brookhaven National Laboratory. We're talking about the addictive quality of obesity. It's not as easy as just telling somebody, look, you need to change your life, you know, tough it out. There's a lot more going on in the brain than just hunger. Okay, stay tuned. We'll be right back with more Superhuman Radio.
Anabolicminds.com is the premier website for credible information on building muscle, burning fat, supplementation, and more. With over 100,000 active registered members and over 2.5 million posts, it's one of the largest communities on the internet to get help and answers to your question. It's also the place that the official Superhuman Radio Forum is hosted. Visit anabolicminds.com today and get into the action. Anabolicminds.com. Learn, teach, lead.
True Protein is now TrueNutrition.com. The company that gave you personalized protein blends has now expanded their offerings to include over 5,000 new products. Whether your interests are health and fitness, sports nutrition and supplements, or fitness gear and accessories, you'll find what you're looking for at TrueNutrition.com. Check out the new vegetarian and vegan product lines as well. Oh, and don't worry, you can still blend your own personal protein supplements with a full range of milk, whey, casein, beef, egg, rice, and soy proteins. Check out TrueNutrition.com today. Wherever you call your battlefield after each training engagement, you must recover. Introducing the most complete all-natural and organic recovery formula, Am Nutrition's Basic Training, formulated by a military veteran. Basic Training provides the ammunition your body needs to recover and continue the fight. No fake sugar or flavors, no GMOs, less than 1 milligram of sugar and soy per serving, with complete nutrition no other company provides. Arm yourself with the healthiest recovery formula on the market, the body's ammunition. And Nutrition. Join the nutritional revolution by going to muscleandnutrition.com. That's muscle, A-M-N-U-T-R-I-T-I-O-N.com.
Recover!
And Nutrition.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing. My near vision has improved, and I can read small print from 8 inches. My overall vision is clearer, and the glare from oncoming headlights doesn't bother me any longer. Just 1 to 2 drops a day, and the results are visible. You can find CanSee eye drops at wisechoicemedicine.net or call 800-861-4936. That's 800-861-4936. wisechoicemedicine.net. CanSee eye drops. The name says it all.
You train hard. You push the limits of your body every day, and sometimes pain pushes back. Now silence your pain with Phoenix Kinetocream. Kinetocream is made using a perfect blend of natural ingredients and reduces inflammation and shuts down pain with its very first use. Listen to what one user said about Phoenix Kinetocream.
Training made me ache. My back, my shoulders, even my elbows. I rub Kinetocream on my shoulders, and in minutes, I could feel the pain go away, not covered up by that freezing feeling like other creams. The pain was gone.
You can learn more about Kinetocream by visiting PhoenixBioPerformance.com. Don't let pain slow you down. Rise above the ashes with Phoenix Kinetocream. That's PhoenixBioPerformance.com. If you want to outlast, outmuscle, and outperform your competition with a high-powered, stimulant-free carbohydrate source that has zero sugars, you want Carbolin. Carbolin is the original high-performance fuel that will allow you to load your muscles with glycogen in minutes instead of hours. As a pre, intra, and post-training supplement, it will give you a hardness and fullness to your muscles like you've never felt before. As an endurance supplement, Carbolin has been proven to increase VO2 max by 2.8%. If you want fast absorption and sustained energy without bloating or cramping, get Carbolin. Go to AAEFX.com today.
Get stronger. Feel younger. It's Superhuman Radio.
Oh, when I woke up tonight, I said I gotta make somebody.
Welcome back. We're talking this hour with Dr. Gene Jack Wang from the Brookhaven National Lab about the addictive quality of obesity. You know, leptin and ghrelin have been discussed ad infinitum. One of the things that is worthy of talking about when it comes to obesity and its addictive quality is a neurotransmitter that seems to show up in lots of addictive qualities, and that's dopamine. Is that not true, Dr. Wang?
That's true.
Can you explain the relationship between addiction and dopamine?
Dopamine is neural systems that involve with our reward, motivation, and motility. And so usually if we feel something interesting, we feel is good, that is the system involved. And later on, it gradually develops into that habituation. So every time you want to do something, and then that is a system, they'll grab the cue and then move on. And then that eventually that we have to do action. So that motility involves that part. So dopamine system is a very important. Almost you can imagine that is the one from the beginning of receive the signal to the end of the implementation of your action.
Now I want to explore this for a second because this is important, and I want to clarify something. Someone who has an addiction, as I remember from college, just the initiation of thinking about going and getting the drug, for instance, elicits a euphoric sense before they even come in contact or get high. And this is because the anticipation that's created by dopamine, which drives them to go and get the drug, actually has a reward of its own that is actually negated by once they use the drug, but that is what drives them to take action to get the drug. If you could suppress dopamine's pushing, if you will, that alone has a beneficial effect on addiction, does it not?
Yes. You see that it's dopamine is that the system, as I mentioned to you, in the beginning that a person never take drug, okay? They don't know what is drug means. So show you a powder, a white powder. You say, well, why is that? And you don't even pay attention to that. But if you use once and you feel good, the next time you say that, wow, that white powder is good. So the moment you see the white powder, and the people tell you that is crack or that is cocaine. Then your eye pop up and say, wow, that is good stuff. So your brain immediately pop out some signal. That is called cue. You want to grab that white powder, and you want to use it. So that is the one you just mentioned, that just the signal just send out, and that's dopamine, they spike. In that moment, then that trigger the memory about good or bad is good, I want to go and grab it, and then use it. The moment the person used the drug, then would trigger more dopamine release, and then even more release of the dopamine, and the person, they are really feel very good.
Now, isn't that depend on what the drug or the what it is that they're attracted to? For instance, foods can actually release a suppressor of dopamine, which is serotonin. Correct?
Yes.
So the dopamine subsides, the sensation of serotonin picks up. Satisfaction lasts a very short period of time because the individuals who have addictive qualities, they tend to be considered dopamine dominant people. And what happens is the dopamine starts to build again, and their need to go and get that feeling again or go and chase that again it comes back, right?
Yeah, but the problem is that initially that you're going to have a lot of surge, and you release a lot. But gradually, that this kind of the impact to the brain is gradually attenuated. That means that the person become tolerance to this kind of the stimulation, and then the brain, we call that the sensitivity decrease. And so then that the person need to use more and more in order to get the same effect. That is the dangers of the drug. But the food also have the similar effect, but the food we are talking about, what kind of food? If the food is a regular food, then they only give you small amount. Unless you have a different kind of food, that is another story. That the food we have is different from the food we have long time ago.
Right. Well, let's address that. We have a diet that is predominantly grain based in this day and age. And these grains, yeah, especially some of the newer dwarf forms of wheat, we know that they have a type of gliadin in them that actually stimulates the endocannabinoid and opioid receptors in the brain. So some of these foods actually have drug-like effects in themselves. So according to addiction, as you point out, the brain becomes more tolerant to the spike of dopamine. So you either have to increase the frequency or you have to increase the dose of the drug. So the obese person, once they fall into this cycle, the brain starts to dictate, I want to eat more often and I want to eat more because I'm becoming more tolerant to the doses you're giving me. So they have to increase their intake of these types of foods, and the frequency increases because the dopamine keeps spiking back up. Is that a fair assessment?
Yes, actually, that it was done in animal study, and animal study proved that some of the food quality, especially with sugar and fat content, and we call palatable food because it tastes good. And initially, that the animal they eat and they gradually like to eat it and then gain weight. If you remove this kind of food to them, then all of a sudden they don't want to eat regular food. And then the moment you put this food back again, they would start eating, and then they start to release a dopamine. So this is proven in animal research. Yeah.
Okay. So, but clearly, dopamine is the primary domino. It's domino one that causes the person to want to go and engage in eating, and then the frequency in the eating starts to cause them to increase the intake load to satisfy this addictive quality. So as a scientist, do you see the opportunity to treat people who have the obesity addiction with something that will quell or suppress their dopamine production?
Well, dopamine is the main drive for this addiction. But remember, there are other neural system also involved. But so remember, you talk about the test or the satiety of this signal. And so the right now the treatment, even with the drug, only target on the dopamine is not really working, and it to be very comprehensive.
Uh-huh.
And so that treatment with that, for example, you mentioned is a very good question that how are we going to use this so-called addictive property to treat this obese person? Yes, the food we eat, as I mentioned to you, we already changed so much in the last 50 years, and that how can we find the food that is really nutritious to these people? Because that, as you mentioned before, that some of the obese person, they specifically like some of the food, and those food are not actually, it's not very good for them, because those food make them like to eat more and more and more. But there are some of the food, I think this is that the one thing is had to be developed in the future. And but at this point of time, and we can advise the people how to eat whatever we have so far, because maybe that some of the food to avoid instead of to take them. Yeah,
ghrelin is thought to be the hunger peptide. And when
yes.
ghrelin is produced, a variety of metabolic processes occur, including the desire to eat. Is ghrelin what causes the other neural hormones, the brain hormones, to be triggered to cause the person to seek out food and eat?
Yes, actually, ghrelin has been linked with the dopamine release. And that, and others, not only ghrelin and leptin also involved. And so there are a lot of interaction that once the person have the food, once the food into the body, for example, the sugar based food, and they would suppress the ghrelin. So because ghrelin is the hormone to promote our eating, and so that was suppressed. And also that in the same time, for example, some of the content like fat would trigger the release of some of the hormone to suppress our appetite, such as cholecystokinin, or even that people say that PYY.
Yeah, PYY, yeah, right.
Polypeptide Y,
right.
Yeah. Those that would help to suppress that our appetite. And so all these that hormone direct, indirect, will interact with our brain neural systems through complicated neural interactions, such as into like hypothalamic area, and then eventually also will reach to the dopamine system. And so that will affect a person's that desire or increase their ability to suppress their desire to eat.
Yeah. Okay. I want to take a quick commercial break. And when we come back, I want to ask you if the landscape of the brain and its neurotransmitters change as a person starts to move into the realm of obesity, or is this something that is in there to begin with? And they're imprinted with it. We're talking with Dr. Gene Jack Wang from the Brookhaven National Lab. We're talking about the addictive quality of obesity. We'll return with this discussion momentarily. Stay tuned. You're listening to Superhuman Radio.
Now I believe in miracles, and I'm never going to step in tonight.
My friends are always asking me what I do to keep my face so youthful and fresh looking. I use RGCell Super Stem Cell Support. RGCell is the only cosmeceutical with penetrating anti-aging messenger molecules that activate old and dormant stem cells to restore your skin to a healthier, younger appearance. This helps to repair DNA, stimulate new cell growth, and aggressively eliminate wrinkles. You can learn more by visiting superhumanradio.com and clicking the RGCell banner ad today.
Calling all men!
The Men's Stack is here from Muscle Gauge Nutrition. The Men's Stack will give you the energy you need to train harder and the materials you need to build new muscle. The Men's Stack includes American Protein Isolate, Stimulant-Free Pre-Workout Alpha Rage, Muscle Pump Activator, L-Arginine, AKG, and Multivitamin Plus Minerals specifically formulated for men. Now, Superhuman Radio listeners can get this Men's Stack for just $99 and free shipping while supplies last. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Muscle Gauge banner ad today.
Eat dessert again with the new 100% natural line of high-protein, low-carb Quest protein bars. I love lemon cream pie and strawberry cheesecake, but you can choose from chocolate peanut butter, coconut cashew, or cinnamon roll as well. No matter which one you try, you'll feel like you're eating dessert. But this is no ordinary dessert. With 20 grams of high-quality whey protein isolate, 17 grams of prebiotic fiber, and sweetened with stevia, these bars will make you feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest Protein Bar banner ad to learn more about these clean and delicious protein bars.
Iron Mag Labs is the leading supplement company offering the most hardcore pro-anabolic supplements. Visit ironmaglabs.com and check out our top-selling products. Asta RX, Halo Extreme, Sinustain RX, E-Control RX, Decadrol Max, Ultramale RX. Iron Mag Labs makes supplements that actually work. No hype, no BS, just real results. There's a reason you keep hearing about Iron Mag Labs. Come see what you're missing. Visit Iron Mag Labs at ironmaglabs.com for the most hardcore bodybuilding supplements.
Never before has an anti-estrogen been so powerful. The triazole formula is built on a potent, all-natural aromatase inhibitor called Pizole, which has been shown in clinical trial to be as effective as a leading prescription aromatase inhibitor. Pizole works in concert with the rest of the triazole formula to control estrogen while simultaneously boosting testosterone significantly. In fact, one of triazole's testers had a 120% increase in total testosterone and a 257% increase in free testosterone. Triazole is available at bodybuilding.com, NutriPlanet.com, or where finest supplements are sold. For more information, check out GetDS.com.
No other peptide supplier has a more complete offering than Southern Research Companies. And no other peptide supplier can boast that all their research peptides are manufactured inside the United States in Tier 1 labs. Whether you're looking for IGF-1 Long R3, GHRP6, GHRP2, Melanotan 2, Mechano Growth Factor, or PT-141, or hard-to-find peptides like Triptorelin or Follistatin, you'll find them at Southern Research Companies. Free shipping on orders over $150. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Southern Research banner ad today and do business with the most trusted name in research peptides, Southern Research Company.
Jumping higher, lifting more. It's Superhuman Radio.
Later in the show, we'll be joined by Dr. Randy Thompson to investigate ancient populations and atherosclerosis. Is it new? Is it something that we have seen in modern times, or has it been around for thousands of years? We're going to find out later in the show. Right now, we're talking with Dr. Gene Jack Wang from Brookhaven National Lab about the addictive quality of obesity. Okay. Dr. Wang.
Yes.
Do people have this neural landscape to begin with that ensures them that they will become obese if they give into it? Or is it something that is acquired, that as you start to travel down the path of obesity, the neural landscape changes to accommodate and propel you further?
Both of them are possible, because that there are some group of people, they have this genetic vulnerability. That means that they are easier to gain weight, and usually you have this family history. However, that as we talked in the beginning of the show, that if the food is in the food we should eat, and if the person eat the food they should eat, and then that do not have so much of food around, then they don't develop into that obese person. They should be maybe a little bit overweight, that's fine. But if the person eating the food they should not eat, especially a lot of processed food right now in our society, then once they get used to do this food and they like this food a lot and they eat this kind of food all the time, then they are doomed to be obese.
Okay, so let's investigate this a little further. A couple times during the interview, you've talked about the food that people should eat versus the food that people shouldn't eat. And I understand when we talk about modern times, we talk about processed foods. We talk about foods that really the food manufacturers hope have an addictive quality because they want people to buy more and more and eat more and more. But let's look at this from a different angle just for a moment. We know that some portion of the population is lactose intolerant. It's thought that this polymorphism occurred as a result of their generations, that transgenerationally, they were not exposed to dairy, and as a result, the body did not adapt to producing lactase, and they cannot tolerate dairy products. So in that context, are there right foods and wrong foods for a person's genetic makeup? Are there some people who, let's say they are of Inuit descent, that they should be eating more fish and such, and maybe another group, maybe that their lineage comes from agrarian style background, that they should be eating more vegetables and so on? Or are we simply talking about modern foods that are highly processed when we talk about the right foods and wrong foods for a person?
Okay, it's a very you have a long, very long question, but let me explain from the lactose intolerance first, because it's one of the very crucial issue. Actually, genetically, we cannot take any milk once we are weaned, and then but there were genetic mutation in Europe and some part of the people in the world that they have the genetic mutation as such that they can drink the milk. And because this advantage, they can drink the milk as such that they are considered healthier than other people during the famine or during that hard time, and as such that they get over with, and then they survive, and then they have a lot of their descendants as such already carry this gene. So cannot drink milk, that is normal. It's not abnormal. But genetically, we eat food with that a lot of raw materials, such as grain, for example. The grain usually come with a lot of fiber. During the our evolution and at the time our history, and gradually a lot of people found that maybe because of the storage reason or because of the taste reason, they remove all this that material considered doesn't taste good, or they should take it out. For example, that the fiber and that some of the nutrition is such that they only take, for example, white flour or white rice.
Right.
And then those become, for some people, they become not so good. Yeah.
Gotcha. So basically what it is, and I've actually talked about this before, the Wenner-Gren Foundation has invested a lot of money into looking at the ancestral diets. And I had a discussion with Leslie Aiello many, many years ago, and she said, you know, the apple of today has been hybridized, if you will, to have much more sugar and than the apple that 1,000 years ago our ancestors were exposed to. The apple 1,000 years ago was bitter, it was dry, it was small, but we have grown our apples to be bigger, to be sweeter, and to fit certain characteristics that we like. So really, it sounds to me like what you're saying is that the food that has evolved because of civilized cultures wanting foods to taste a certain way and to have certain qualities, many of them are not good for us any longer. Is that a fair statement?
I would say so. And especially a lot of people, they prefer even processed, not only the agriculture itself, also processed. For example, a lot of people instead of eating a whole apple, people prefer apple juice.
Right.
And then get rid of all this fiber, and as such that they can drink a cup of that apple juice, that equals to the juice from five apples.
Right.
And then they can drink in the very fast, and they can drink the complete that amount of the five apples. And so they absorb into our body faster. And
sugar.
As you mentioned.
And it's all, and all the
yes,
sugar. All
a
the
lot
sugar.
Of sugar right. And a lot of fructose. Yeah.
Right. And devoid of all the value that we've learned that in the flesh of the fruit carries a lot of benefits. And you're right. So it's almost like we go for the sweet. We go for the refined over and over again. And actually we're going to have this discussion later in the show, I predict, because we know that the ancient Egyptians, loved their sweets. They did a lot of things that we do today. And quite frankly, it destroyed their civilization. They were one of the earliest civilizations to show signs of, precocious puberty, tooth decay, and atherosclerosis. So it's like we thrive for this stuff. We look for it. We favor it. And it's very, very interesting. Okay, we're going to take our last commercial break. When we come back, Dr. Wang, I want to talk to you about if there's any advice, anything that we can tell the person who is obese, fighting against obesity, that they can leverage the research that you're doing to help them be more successful in regaining their normal body weight. We're talking with Dr. Gene Jack Wang from the Brookhaven National Lab. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
My friends are always asking me what I do to keep my face so youthful and fresh looking. I use RGCell Super Stem Cell Support. RGCell is the only cosmeceutical with penetrating anti-aging messenger molecules that activate old and dormant stem cells to restore your skin to a healthier, younger appearance. This helps to repair DNA, stimulate new cell growth, and aggressively eliminate wrinkles. You can learn more by visiting superhumanradio.com and clicking the RGCell banner ad today.
Orbit Nutrition carries over 1,000 of the hottest nutritional supplements, performance enhancers, and nutraceuticals on the planet. And now Superhuman Radio listeners get an additional 5% off their everyday low prices by using the coupon code SHR5. That's SHR and the number 5. Choose from products like Quest Protein Bars, iForce Nutrition, Iron Mag Labs, and more. Check out Orbit's daily deals for special insane blowout prices. Log on to the Orbit Nutrition forum and get feedback about the products you're shopping for and get an additional 5% off using the coupon code SHR5. Orbit Nutrition. Fast, reliable, competitive, international. Why shop anywhere else?
This time of year, it seems everyone's sick. You need to do everything you can to avoid it. A healthy immune system starts with a healthy lifestyle. This includes Altrient C. Altrient C delivers the vitamin C your body needs. In fact, Altrient delivers 200% more vitamin C than pills or powders. Go to AltrientC.com. That's AltrientC.com. It even comes with a money-back guarantee. For vitamin C that actually gets absorbed, go to AltrientC.com or call 888-437-6353 to order. That's 888-437-6353. Altrient C. 21st century vitamin C.
If you want to outlast, outmuscle, and outperform your competition with a high-powered, stimulant-free carbohydrate source that has zero sugars, you want Carbolin. Carbolin is the original high-performance fuel that will allow you to load your muscles with glycogen in minutes instead of hours. As a pre, intra, and post-training supplement, it will give you a hardness and fullness to your muscles like you've never felt before. As an endurance supplement, Carbolin has been proven to increase VO2 max by 2.8%. If you want fast absorption and sustained energy without bloating or cramping, get Carbolin. Go to AAEFX.com today. Whey Natural USA is the best whey protein in the world. Not only is it from Amish grass-fed cows inside the United States, but it's the only grass-fed whey in the world that is not heat pasteurized. Don't be fooled by other grass-fed whey products that are low heat pasteurized. Only the patented Chill-Rite process leaves all the natural fractions of whey intact to boost your immune system while building more muscle. And Whey Natural USA is also the lowest price for non-heat pasteurized grass-fed whey protein in the world. Don't waste your time on products that only deliver 15 grams of protein per scoop. Choose the best with 25 grams of protein per scoop. Whey Natural USA. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Whey Natural USA banner ad today to see why anything less is wasting your money.
Thousands of Superhuman Radio listeners already know how well GLC 2000 works at repairing joints and cartilage, and it's the best price on the market, milligram for milligram.
Now GLC Direct is offering a special that my listeners can take advantage of. Buy one, get one free of any GLC 2000 product. That's right. Buy one of your favorite GLC 2000 products and get one free. Capsules or raw powder. Just mention Superhuman Radio and buy one, get one free today. Call 866-452-3473 or click the GLC banner ad on superhumanradio.com. Offer limited to one per household.
Build muscle, burn fat. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back. Dr. Wang, is there anything that the obese person can do to help fight their addiction to food, to help help them win the battle against obesity?
Yes, but there is a very comprehensive a method to do that, because that I mentioned to you that this is addiction is a very considered a very, very difficult situation, especially related to the food, because that we need to eat food for survival, and it's worse than like a cigarette or other kind of the drugs.
Right.
Because
right.
like we can do without them, but
right.
the food we need it. So now the problem is how. What is good for you, then that is a little bit challenging. But there are several principles we should know based on our study, because there are several items of food they have a more addictive property than other food. For example, the food contain a lot of sugar. That the one already proven in animal study that would have addictive property.
Well, what about artificial sweeteners? Do they fall into that? If you use an artificial sweetener, is it not going to also propel the brain into that same reward state and make you want more sweets?
It will too. It was done in other human study and shown that actually artificial sweetener actually will reach to our brain related to the hedonic area and make you feel good, but it never reach your reward area. So that means that your brain said that, well, you know, I got sweet, but I expect some energy into the body. It never arrived. Then the person will compensate eating more.
Yeah.
And so that is the problem, because the sweet taste itself is kind of dangerous. As I mentioned in the last section, you mentioned about the apple. Because apple, right now, the new kind of apple are so sweet. The people like to eat that. And then is make you eat more and more. So you increase that dose. That means that you like it, and not only the apple, you want to eat everything sweeter. So that means that that's going to be a problem. And so that people say, "Oh well, I can replace with artificial sweetener." Actually, it's not very good either. So actually, that for the drink, water is the best.
Yeah, I agree. We talked about that on Friday. I can't believe people still drink soda. Dr. Wang, does season play a role in the body's propensity to increase the reward faction of food? It seems to me that when the weather is cold, adjusting for activity, the body becomes more efficient at building body fat. Is that a misunderstanding of mine?
Well, there were studies, but not from our laboratory, shown that it's a proportion of the people, they have a so-called seasonal leptin resistance.
Mm.
That means that by the time they reach to like fall or in the winter, because that in the past, fall and winter means that you don't have, fall is the time you need to eat more, because you have a lot of food. Harvest.
Right.
And then you know that in the winter you don't have food to eat. So, a proportion of the people, they develop this, so-called leptin, seasonal leptin, resistance in order to eat more. And I don't know whether people really identify what kind of people has that or not. But this is just a hypothesis, yeah.
Any evidence that has your group or any group looked at primitive cultures and obesity to find, because it would stand to reason that the more primitive the culture, the more efficient they would be at creating body fat because of famine and natural conditions. Do we see obesity in primitive cultures that have not been affected by modernization or westernization of diet?
It's very interesting you have this question that usually in a very primitive society, they could be very fit, or they are very fit. But the point is that the moment they receive the modern food, they become obese right. immediately. So the distance, the junction between the fit and the obesity just all of a sudden happens just like that. And so that because of the food content and make this very primitive society people immediately become from even hunger and become obese. There's no fit that period of time, and then they just jump into the obesity.
Oh, you know what? And it stands to reason, to come full circle to what we were saying at the beginning of the show. The ability to become obese is actually a genetic gift that has allowed some people's ancestors to survive great famine, great winters. The ideal model that we look for today, the ultra lean, ultra muscular person, that was a genetic deficit. You were not going to last in 1,000 years ago during famine or severe winters. So when we look at people like the Samoans, or we look at people like the Inuit, and we know that when they come in contact with the Western way of eating, they become obese rapidly and almost 100% certainly. And that's because they are still tied to their to their primitive genotype that actually made them more efficient and allowed them to survive in the times that we were faced with back then. But today it's a deficit. Isn't that true?
I agree with you, especially that the food item, for example, people like Inuit, they eat the food is different from you and I we eat. They eat seal, they eat that, these sea animals, they eat that with, this actually they are pretty chubby, they are big, they have a lot of subcutaneous fat. But, sometimes they eat raw, seal, they eat the raw whale meat. But the moment they change to the regular so-called American diet, that means that they eat beef, then they are facing problem because that the content of this material are different because those fat are different from the fat we have because even right now, the beef we have in the United States, most of them are not grass-fed.
Right.
So that the fat content is different from those the food they had. And so it make the body, our body, to accept this new ingredient different so that it affect the distribution of the fat in the body. Those fat eventually would become, right now the people more and more in this research so-called inflammatory. They generate inflammation to the
sure,
body.
Sure, because of the hot. We've talked about this on the show for 8 years. Grass-fed, grass-finished cows have a 1-to-1 ratio of omega-3 to omega-6. But cows that eat corn and grain and soy, they have a 1-to-26 ratio of omega-3 to omega-6. Now, omega-6 fats are important, but when they become so prevalent, it causes the chronic inflammation in the body, and this is why beef gets such a bad name. It's not beef that's the problem. It's the commercial way that they grow beef today. That's the problem.
Agree.
Dr. Wang, we've come to the end of the interview. I want to thank you. I want to commend you for the work that you're doing, and I want people to take this away from the interview. If you know somebody who's obese or you're obese, you need to take it seriously. It is an addiction, and you need to look at yourself the same way you would look at an alcoholic or a drug addict. You need multiple interventions in order to be successful at winning the battle of obesity. Dr. Wang, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you.
Okay. Stay tuned. When we come back, we're going to pick it up with Dr. Randy Thompson. You're listening to Superhuman Radio. We'll be right back.
Brothers are amused by other brothers' reps. Brothers, cause in the night you'll feel fright. Cause in the night you'll feel fright. Cause in the night you'll feel fright. I guess you just might wanna do a dance.
Calling all men. The Men's Stack is here from Muscle Gauge Nutrition. The Men's Stack will give you the energy you need to train harder and the materials you need to build new muscle. The Men's Stack includes American Protein Isolate, Stimulant-Free Pre-Workout Alpha Rage, Muscle Pump Activator, L-Arginine, AKG, and Multivitamin Plus Minerals specifically formulated for men. Now, Superhuman Radio listeners can get this Men's Stack for just $99 and free shipping while supplies last. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Muscle Gauge banner ad today.
No other peptide supplier has a more complete offering than Southern Research Companies. And no other peptide supplier can boast that all their research peptides are manufactured inside the United States in Tier 1 labs. Whether you're looking for IGF-1 Long R3, GHRP6, GHRP2, Melanotan-2, Mechanogrowth Factor, or PT-141, or hard-to-find peptides like Triptorelin or Follistatin, you'll find them at Southern Research Companies. Free shipping on orders over $150. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Southern Research banner ad today and do business with the most trusted name in research peptides, Southern Research Company.
You train hard. You push the limits of your body every day, and sometimes pain pushes back. Now silence your pain with Phoenix Kinetocream. Kinetocream is made using a perfect blend of natural ingredients and reduces inflammation and shuts down pain with its very first use. Listen to what one user said about Phoenix Kinetocream.
Training made me ache. My back, my shoulders, even my elbows. I rubbed Kinetocream on my shoulders, and in minutes, I could feel the pain go away, not covered up by that freezing feeling like other creams. The pain was gone.
You can learn more about Kinetocream by visiting PhoenixBioPerformance.com. Don't let pain slow you down. Rise above the ashes with Phoenix Kinetocream. That's PhoenixBioPerformance.com. New from Rob Riggish, author of The Blueprint and SHR's own Blueprint Power Hour, comes the Blueprint Bulletin. Every month, Rob delivers the absolute latest and greatest information right to your inbox. Everything's on the table, including training, diet, supplementation, gray market products, and more. This is a fantastic way to stay one step ahead of your competition and use these secrets to up your game. Go to theblueprintbulletin.com or click the Blueprint Bulletin banner ad on superhumanradio.com to get your free introductory issue. Go to theblueprintbulletin.com today. Wherever you call your battlefield after each training engagement, you must recover. Introducing the most complete all-natural and organic recovery formula and Nutrition's Basic Training, formulated by a military veteran. Basic Training provides the ammunition your body needs to recover and continue the fight. No fake sugar or flavors. No GMOs. Less than 1 milligram of sugar and soy per serving with complete nutrition no other company provides. Arm yourself with the healthiest recovery formula on the market. The body's ammunition. And Nutrition. Join the nutritional revolution by going to muscleandnutrition.com. That's muscle, AMNUTRITION.com.
Recover!
And Nutrition. Everyone wants growth hormone because growth hormone works. Now AgeForce is offering a buy one, get one free on their most popular transdermal patch. The Power Patch contains 25 milligrams of real somatropin per patch. It delivers real, competent human growth hormone right to your bloodstream without the discomfort of injections. There's never been a better time to see what the Power Patch can do for you. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the AgeForce banner ad today. This offer ends soon. Get your growth hormone the AgeForce way. Power Patch.
Spit that out right now. This is the Superhuman Channel.
No need for intros, that's an insult. Welcome back. You know, we have the ability to embrace our ancestors like they had all the answers. We see this in people who take ancestral diets and paleo nutrition a little too far. I'm not negating the importance of them. They're really good, better than the modern way of eating. But a lot of times we think, oh, our ancestors, they had it right. All this stuff is relatively new to our society. Dr. Randy Thompson is with St. Luke's Mid-America Heart Institute. How you doing, Dr. Thompson?
Very well. Thanks for being here.
Yeah,
thanks
my pleasure.
Thanks for the invitation to be here.
Yeah, and you recently published a paper that looks at atherosclerosis over the course of 4,000 years. First of all, how did you do this? Where did you find the research? What did you look at?
Yeah, we were amazed. So we CT scanned 137 mummies. And what we say is that atherosclerosis is a serial killer that's been stalking mankind for 4,000 years. And the evidence they were looking for is residue, if you will, on the CT scanner, calcification in an artery, which is laid down when the artery hardens, lasts a long time. As we see, it lasts thousands of years.
Wow.
The body's preserved. And we CT scan four different subgroups from ancient Egypt, ancient Peru, about 200 AD to 1500 AD, and then the ancestral Pueblans from the southwestern United States, about 1,000 or so AD. And then the fourth group was the most interesting one in a sense. It's the Anangan, who are from the Aleutian Islands off the coast of Alaska. They were not that long ago, but they were living a traditional hunter-gatherer lifestyle, hunting from kayaks and that kind of thing.
Right.
And we found that the calcifications, the signs of atherosclerosis, the disease that causes heart attacks and strokes, was present, not hard to find, in all four of these populations across 4,000 years. So we're going back now solidly to 2000 BC, and in every epoch, every 250 to 500 year epoch, we've at least had mummies that had this disease.
Now the four groups that you talk about have all been thought to be civilizations that have kind of come to an end, if you will, right?
I suppose that's right. The ancient Peruvians these are Incas and pre-Incas.
Right.
They were conquered by the Spanish, and their culture came to an end then. The ancient Egyptians ran a course for over 2,000 years, though. And the Native Americans of North America were assimilated with the white migration and a settlement of North America.
Okay. I love talking about the Egyptians. We've talked about them in years past because I almost feel like the ancient Egyptians are a model for what we're doing today in Western cultures. They embraced staying up late at night. They loved sweets. They suffered from tooth decay. They had children that suffered from precocious puberty. And we see a lot of these things in westernized, modernized countries as well today. And kind of, to me, it's almost like the canary in the mine. And I'm just curious, and we're going to get right back on the task here, but are there cultures out there that have been around as long as the ones that you looked at that did not have evidence of atherosclerosis?
Well, no one's looked. We're hoping to expand our search to cast a wider net, but no one's looked yet. It's not easy to get this many mummies accumulated as it was. That does, to be able to look at it, you do need a mummy. You need the body to be preserved, which means that you need a dry environment and a culture where the civilization valued the dead and mummified for that reason. And so we could look further afield. There are other populations that mummified, but these are the four that we've been able to study so far.
Yeah. Okay, so as I said at the beginning of the interview, we love to romance and think of our ancestors of not being exposed to all of the things that we're exposed to today, especially with the rampant nature of disease in society today. What did you find? There was atherosclerosis back then, and was it as prevalent as it is today?
Well, it's hard to tell how prevalent it was. It was common. It was not hard to find in our study. We're looking for calcifications in the arteries, and we're really dependent on how well the mummy was preserved. The 34% that had calcifications takes into account some mummies that had very little preservation, and we couldn't say much about their arteries or soft tissue, but we included them in the study anyway. So it may be an even higher number. So how that compares to people today is a little hard to tell. We could see the disease. We could see it present, and there were several mummies where surely they must have had symptoms from this disease. So, for example, the hunter-gatherers of the Aleutian Islands, there was one woman who was 50 years old about when she died, and she had very extensive calcifications all over the coronary arteries and in other vessels. I mean, she really was what we'd call an arteriopath, just a very heavy disease burden. Surely she would have needed treatment, maybe even a bypass if she was alive today. And I hear she's eating a marine-based diet and a hunter-gatherer lifestyle. Presumably she's more active than we are.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there were a couple of Egyptians that also had very heavy calcifications. One was a princess from about 3,500 years ago. Now she would have had a life of leisure and she would have been carried around even maybe, but she would have had a rich diet and not very much exercise and so perhaps that's her lifestyle is kind of like ours, but the disease burden was really quite severe. And then the other with a lot of disease was a scribe from the 18th dynasty of ancient Egypt who had very heavy calcification of the arteries to the head, the carotid arteries, and the kind of person we think would have needed a carotid operation for that.
You know what's really interesting, and I was thinking about this, and while you said the one woman was a hunter-gatherer of sorts, I was just wondering if from an epidemiological standpoint, if mummified remains is a cross-section of the average human back then, or were these people of, higher upper class, and as a result, they may have lived lives and been exposed to things that we know today, like heavy sugar consumption and certain grains that seem to cause inflammation and plaque buildup and so on and so forth. So is it possible that this small universe that you're looking at is actually skewed because the average person who toiled and ate the foods that the lower class ate did not have this because we don't know that because they were not special enough to be mummified?
Well, I think that that statement's probably true for the Egyptians. At least if you were mummified in ancient Egypt, you tended to be the upper echelons, the elites, and some of them were very, very elite, and the priests probably did eat a very rich diet, and those who were elite didn't exercise very much, but we had 76 ancient Egyptians, and some of them weren't high class, we didn't think. But I don't think you can make that statement for the other cultures. The ancient Peruvians were hierarchical, but they were much more democratic than the Egyptians were, and they didn't have nearly as advanced agriculture and so forth. So the people that were mummified, although they might have been revered in life, and therefore someone wanted to take care of their body and mummify them, they probably weren't as elite or eating the kind of diet that we think of as causing heart disease.
Right.
And then the North American mummies, they only have 10 of them, but 5 of them had heavy disease, and we don't think were particularly elite at all. They probably were probably a fairly democratic society.
You know, it's funny because I think I had a discussion similar to this. Not this specific discussion, but somehow we got onto this about the ancient Egyptians with Dr. Lauren Cordain in the many interviews I've done with him over the years. And he talked about a mummified baby estimated to be like 3 or 4 years old that already had some plaque buildup that they saw. Are you familiar with that that particular study?
I'm not familiar with that. We did report our findings in ancient Egyptians 2 years ago. We had 51 Egyptian mummies then, and we didn't include small children. We tried to find mummies that were well preserved, and we just kept it in adults. Now, we have CT scans some children by accident. So, for example, if you CT scan a sarcophagus, or in the case of Peru, you've got a bundle. You don't know quite what's in the bundle. We didn't find any calcifications ourselves in the children that we accidentally scanned.
Yeah, that's interesting. So we have to take our first commercial break. When we come back, I want to know if we know anything maybe in the writings about what kind of disease burden this did provide with these ancient people who were suffering from atherosclerosis, which obviously has been around a lot longer than modern times. And perhaps we can even discuss why we think it's been around. We're talking this hour with Dr. Randy Thompson from St. Luke's Mid-America Heart Institute about atherosclerosis in ancient times. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
True Protein is now TrueNutrition.com. The company that gave you personalized protein blends has now expanded their offerings to include over 5,000 new products. Whether your interests are health and fitness, sports nutrition and supplements, or fitness gear and accessories, you'll find what you're looking for at TrueNutrition.com. Check out the new vegetarian and vegan product lines as well. Oh, and don't worry, you can still blend your own personal protein supplements with a full range of milk, whey, casein, beef, egg, rice, and soy proteins. Check out TrueNutrition.com today.
This time of year, it seems everyone's sick. You need to do everything you can to avoid it. A healthy immune system starts with a healthy lifestyle. This includes Altrian C. Altrian C delivers the vitamin C your body needs. In fact, Altrian delivers 200% more vitamin C than pills or powders. Go to AltrianC.com. That's AltrianC.com. It even comes with a money-back guarantee. For vitamin C that actually gets absorbed, go to AltriantC.com or call 888-437-6353 to order. That's 888-437-6353. Altriant C. 21st century vitamin C.
You train hard. You push the limits of your body every day, and sometimes pain pushes back. Now silence your pain with Phoenix Kinetocream. Kinetocream is made using a perfect blend of natural ingredients and reduces inflammation and shuts down pain with its very first use. Listen to what one user said about Phoenix Kinetocream.
Training made me ache. My back, my shoulders, even my elbows. I rub Kinetocream on my shoulders, and in minutes, I could feel the pain go away, not covered up by that freezing feeling like other creams. The pain was gone.
You can learn more about Kinetic Cream by visiting PhoenixBioPerformance.com. Don't let pain slow you down. Rise above the ashes with Phoenix Kinetic Cream. That's PhoenixBioPerformance.com.
New from Rob Riggish, author of the Blueprint and SHR's own Blueprint Power Hour, comes the Blueprint Bulletin. Every month, Rob delivers the absolute latest and greatest information right to your inbox. Everything's on the table, including training, diet, supplementation, gray market products, and more. This is a fantastic way to stay one step ahead of your competition and use these secrets to up your game. Go to theblueprintbulletin.com or click the Blueprint Bulletin banner ad on superhumanradio.com to get your free introductory issue. Go to theblueprintbulletin.com today.
I usually avoid protein bars because they're generally just candy in disguise, but that's all changed now. With Quest protein bars, we can enjoy dessert again without the guilt. With 20 grams of whey isolate protein, tons of prebiotic fiber, no sugar added, and only 2 to 6 grams of active carbohydrates per bar, Quest bars will keep you full and lean. I've never endorsed a protein bar before because I simply didn't trust them. That's all changed with the Quest bar. Not just because of what's in them, but more so for what's not. Go to superhumanradio.com today and click the Quest protein bar banner ad. Start enjoying dessert again.
No other peptide supplier has a more complete offering than Southern Research Companies. And no other peptide supplier can boast that all their research peptides are manufactured inside the United States in Tier 1 labs. Whether you're looking for IGF-1 long R3, GHRP6, GHRP2, melanotan 2, mechanical growth factor, or PT-141, or hard-to-find peptides like triptorelin or follistatin, you'll find them at Southern Research Companies. Free shipping on orders over $150. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Southern Research banner ad today and do business with the most trusted name in research peptides, Southern Research Companies.
Listen strong. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back. We're talking with Dr. Randy Thompson about arteriosclerosis that seems to have spanned 4,000 years. It's nothing new. Okay, so is there anything in ancient writings that would lead someone who is astute about the symptoms of this type of blockage, stenosis in arteries of the heart, that would lead us to think that, yeah, this was a problem back then, you know, shortness of breath and, you know, so on and so forth?
You know, there is. In ancient Egypt, they had writings. They had a written language, and several papyri have survived. And there are a few of them that have medical writings. The ancient Egyptian physicians were famous in the ancient world for being skilled and very knowledgeable. And one of those papyri that survived is called the Ebers Papyrus. It's about 3,500 years old, named after George Ebers that bought it. And it's translated from the hieroglyphics, and they do describe advice for physicians. And if a patient had something that the physician couldn't do anything about, the physician didn't want to treat them because it would make them look bad and hurt their careers, I suppose. But anyway, in the writing it says that if a man has pain in his chest. It's death that threatens him, and that's a bad sign. And now we would recognize that as being, well, chest pain leading to death, that's a heart attack or myocardial infarction, or maybe angina pectoris, which is going to lead to a heart attack in the near future.
Right.
And so that seems pretty clear. And then also in ancient Egypt, they had paintings on the tomb walls. And a couple of paintings include the deceased gripping his chest and collapsing. And we would view that as being a heart attack or most likely a heart attack and death, and then everyone grieving and so forth. So if you look at the record in detail, they clearly had recognized this sort of phenomenon in ancient Egypt, and it must have happened. Now, the other cultures that we studied, ancient Peru and ancestral Puebloans, didn't have a written language, and so we don't know.
Of the four groups that you looked at, I know that with the, is it pronounced Yunangan?
Right.
And also the Puebloans, you had a very small sampling of each of these mummies, right?
That's right.
So it's hard to really give that a gravity, but in your best estimation, were there a group that seemed to have a greater prevalence of developing atherosclerosis than the others?
We can't really tell. We can say that it's common. So even though we had only five mummies from the Aleutian Islands and five mummies from the American Southwest, we can say the disease was present. It was present and quite obvious.
Right.
But in terms of whether it was more common in one culture or another, or whether we can start thinking of risk factors that may have had, we've not been able to get there so far. It seems to be about as common in men as women. Seems to be, of course, it's more common in people that live longer. We would expect that, but we did show that the older the person was at the time of death, the more likely they were to have these calcifications. But it looks like it's fairly ubiquitous. And if I were to guess, I'd say it's about the same level of frequency as we see today, the same ballpark anyway.
Do we know if any of these mummies actually succumb to the plaque buildup and perhaps heart attack? Is there any way to even ascertain that? Or do we know that they just died of some other illness or accident or something?
Well, we can't tell that from the CAT scan. We do have one mummy where the heart was very well preserved. So in our CT scans, about a quarter of the time the heart was present, which we thought was pretty good. The soft tissue often disintegrates and you see the calcium left behind. But
right.
There's one Egyptian mummy. She's actually quite famous. It's Lady Rai, who lived in the New Kingdom of ancient Egypt. And her heart is well preserved, and there's a densely bright spot in the heart that sure looks like a heart attack to me. I couldn't get the other doctors to come to a consensus, but it was we really thought it might.
So in other words, would think that it was like necrotic tissue that might have just been calcified over time?
Right. Sometimes heart attacks, if the person lives longer enough, the heart attack can become dense and calcified on a CT scan.
Right, right. Yeah, wow, that's amazing. And I know this is not your bailiwick, but obviously the desire to understand atherosclerosis presence in these ancient populations is to help us unlock where it could be coming from and what we could modify to mitigate the risk of developing it. Obviously, that's got to be the final goal of this type of research. It's not adequate just to say, oh, yeah, we've always had it. Don't worry about it. It's like we've always had it. Now what do we do? Now that we know they had it back there, what can we start to pull strings from and say, well, maybe this is what causes it after all? Is there any decisions being made about looking at the diets of these ancient civilizations to try to say, well, maybe it came from here?
Well, our conclusion is that this disease is in large part from human aging and part of the human condition, because we have now four cultures from very wide geographic span, you know, from Alaska over to down South America and Egypt, and we've got a very wide time span, 4,000 years, if you will, and different cultures, different climates, different diets, and so forth. So our conclusion is that the disease seems to be at least in part aging. Now, that said, it's obviously from a complex interaction of environment, and we've got some control over our environment, and genetics, which we don't have so much control over, and aging, which, you know, we don't have much control over either. But on the one hand, if we have less control of this than some people might like to think or might like us to think, then that doesn't mean you shouldn't try to control the risk factors you can control. We've got 80 years of research on risk factors. All that's true. I would say I think that our research sheds light and maybe makes us question whether we understand risk factors as well as we used to think.
Bingo. Yeah.
Maybe we need to think about other risk factors, maybe the things we're missing.
Well, and that's my point. See, because with no disrespect to the medical orthodoxy today, I think that Dr. Ansel Keys, as well-meaning as he was, sent us off in the wrong path, implicating cholesterol as the cause of atherosclerosis. And in fact, I think that cholesterol is corollary. And the analogy I always use on the show is, if I come in your home and punch a hole in your wall and you spackle it, is the spackle the problem? Of course not. It was me punching the hole in the wall. So trying to treat the spackle isn't the answer. Trying to keep the hole from being punched in the wall, so the spackle has to be deployed to patch it, is the goal. And so the reason I say this is, I think, and I'm going to go off on a limb here because I don't know the answer to this, and I'm standing to be corrected, but I think there's been a lot of evidence that is now linking our reliance on grains, which bear a high degree of lectins, which are nature's pesticides, which several good universities have now done studies and shown that it causes the kind of chronic inflammation in the arterial wall that leads to plaque buildup. I have to believe that all of these civilizations ate grains. Am I wrong on that?
Well, the one civilization that didn't eat grain were the Aleutian Islanders. They were pure hunter-gatherers. They ate some berries, but they ate seals and whale blubber and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what's surprising about our study. This is the first time that hunter-gatherers have been shown to have this kind of disease. And the example I mentioned was very heavy disease. This woman who lived in the remote area of the Aleutian Islands had very heavy coronary calcifications. Looks like the kind of person that would need a bypass today.
Right.
So at least based on the three examples from the Aleutian Islanders, it's hard to pin it all on grain. Now, and you can't say the cholesterol and fat are not important at all. Clearly, when we lower the cholesterol, people do better. The drugs that we give to lower the cholesterol work and for our cardiac patients. And clearly, there are lifestyles and diets that are healthier than others. But people over the years have developed this disease despite what we can learn about them.
Yeah, obviously. And it would be. And why were there so few of the Pueblans and the Aleutian Island inhabitants as far as mummies? Did they just not keep well, or did they not mummify everything and everybody back then?
There are a lot of mummies in Peru. The Peruvian authorities have collected a large number. The Peruvians had a long civilization in a very dry climate. Before they could mummify, and there are thousands of them there. And that was the religious practice in ancient Egypt for at least 2,000 years, where they got very good at preservation, embalming, and mummification. And some other cultures have done it just less extensively. And I think that's what we found here. If we, as we continue this research, we'll try to expand our numbers of the other cultures and get other cultures. But we accumulated 137 mummies, which is by far the largest number anyone else has ever been able to accumulate.
I wonder if the Hunza care for their dead by embalming and preserving. Because the Hunza are a very long-lived group of people. They're lacto-vegans, and they at least up until about 6 or 7 years ago had been relatively uninfluenced by Westernization. And we've done shows about the Hunza, and when we look at them, there's another group in Africa that is probably harder to find, and that's the Folotians, who are clearly descendants of the Israelites, because they're an African group that practices what would be considered modern Judaism. Hanukkah, and I mean, you know, they use all this. Yeah, I know. They're a very ancient civilization. I learned about when I was visiting Yugoslavia once. I met a man who did a type of National Geographic's type show for the Israeli country, and they had visited the Phoenicians, and they've been relatively uninterrupted and untouched for thousands of years. But the question is, do they care for their dead in such a way that you could then, you know, get them to agree to let you CT scan some of these mummified remains? That would be really interesting.
Well, I don't know about those cultures. Now, the hunter-gatherer culture, or the culture that's held out as being healthy and seems to have a very low rate of heart disease, are the Trobian Islanders. Oh. Now, you know, they've been studied with the sort of common tools like EKGs and medical histories and so forth. But it'd be fascinating to take a CT scan over there and see if they perhaps just had this disease also. Just what they do in their life makes it, or perhaps their genetics makes it less manifest, but that they have the same kind of plaques that we're seeing in these ancient people. That'd be fascinating also.
Yeah, and you know, I have some more questions. This is really intriguing to me. So let's do this. Let's take a quick commercial break. When we come back, we're going to pick it up with Dr. Randy Thompson from St. Luke's Mid-America Heart Institute. We're talking about ancient civilizations and the prevalence to build up plaque in the arteries. Nothing new, folks, but maybe we can learn from those who came before us. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Superhuman Radio has the smartest and most dedicated health and fitness listeners found anywhere in the world. If you're trying to tap this market of greater than 50 million health fitness consumers, you simply can't do better than advertising on Superhuman Radio. Our sponsors tell us Superhuman Radio outperforms other forms of advertising time and time again. If you're tired of wasting valuable advertising dollars and need a new way to build your client base, go to superhumanradio.com and click on the Advertise with Us link. It just may be the best thing you have ever done for your business. Electronic muscle stimulation is state of the art for pain management and muscle recovery. Now from ABC Medical comes the Pain Pod. Pain Pod is a professional strength EMS unit and provides 12 therapeutic modes and 20 intensity settings. It comes with everything you need: small, convenient, rechargeable, and portable. But make no mistake, Pain Pod delivers commercial grade strength for immediate pain relief. The Pain Pod normally sells for $349, but for a limited time, the Superhuman Nation can get the Pain Pod for only $200, including shipping. Pain Pod comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Pain Pod banner ad today to learn more. Have you ever been let down by so-called nitric oxide muscle pump products before? Well, prepare to be shocked. Vengeance is like nothing you've ever tried before. Vengeance leverages several different scientifically proven technologies to deliver what some users say are painfully explosive pumps. If you are satisfied with nitric oxide products that make you wonder if they're working, move on. But if you want a muscle pump that you'll not only feel, but others will see, train with a vengeance. Go to xfmuscle.com today and get vengeance. Everyone wants growth hormone because growth hormone works. Now AgeForce is offering a buy one, get one free on their most popular transdermal patch. The Power Patch contains 25 milligrams of real somatropin per patch. It delivers real, competent human growth hormone right to your bloodstream without the discomfort of injections. There's never been a better time to see what the Power Patch can do for you. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the AgeForce banner ad today. This offer ends soon. Get your growth hormone the AgeForce way. Power Patch.
AnabolicMinds.com is the premier website for credible information on building muscle, burning fat, supplementation, and more. With over 100,000 active registered members and over 2.5 million posts, it's one of the largest communities on the internet to get help and answers to your question. It's also the place that the official Superhuman Radio forum is hosted. Visit AnabolicMinds.com today and get into the action. AnabolicMinds.com. Learn, teach, lead.
Calling all men. The Men's Stack is here from Muscle Gauge Nutrition. The Men's Stack will give you the energy you need to train harder and the materials you need to build new muscle. The Men's Stack includes American Protein Isolate, Stimulant-Free Pre-Workout Alpha Rage, Muscle Pump Activator, L-Arginine, AKG, and Multivitamin Plus Minerals specifically formulated for men. Now, Superhuman Radio listeners can get this Men's Stack for just $99 and free shipping while supplies last. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Muscle Gauge banner ad today.
Build muscle, burn fat. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. Okay, we've been talking a lot about the percentage of these mummified remains that have plaque. What about the ones that didn't? A larger percentage did not have plaque, right?
That's right.
And so we're not talking about them. Perhaps the secret lies in these individuals. So the ones that did not have plaque, were they in such poor shape that you could not determine, so they had to not be added to the plaque-containing group, or were they clearly plaque-free?
Well, some of them were poorly preserved, and we included them in the denominator just to be complete and honest, but a fair number of the others had were younger and didn't have any evidence for plaque. Now, we were dependent on the level of preservation, so sometimes mummies were very well preserved. You could see a lot of arteries, but you could never see all of the arteries. The arteries tend to disintegrate if they're healthy and so forth. So we can't say much about the ones that didn't have disease, we think, except they were younger. Mm-hmm. And, of course, people in ancient times didn't live as long as we do. The average age of our mummies was under 40, we estimate. You can estimate the age at time of death from the bones, especially the shoulders, the humerus and the skull plates go through different stages. And up to about age 60, you can age within plus or minus, say, 8 years. It's not super precise, but we could tell that the average age was under 40 or so. As you can imagine, most people back in ancient times died of infections or the kind of things that we have cures for today.
Well, with that being said, one of my problems with average age is, like even in population studies, when we look back 100 years, they go, well, the average person only lived to be, 50 years old or 40 years old. But that's taking into account in those studies those who died at childbirth, which really pulls the number down. So my question to you would be, was there any evidence in any of the mummies of people that lived into their 7th, 8th, and 9th decade of life?
Well, we do have some long-lived mummies. The technique we use kind of breaks down, but in ancient Egypt, there were some kings, some pharaohs that lived into a very advanced age. Ramses the Great lived into his 80s, and Pepe, one of the longest-lived monarch, was into his 90s. So clearly some people in ancient times lived very long. The majority, though, succumbed to the kind of things that existed in ancient times that we've got
cures for. Yeah, like infectious diseases. I mean, that's really up until the late 1800s, early 1900s, we were still, succumbing to infectious diseases to a great deal. And injuries back then, if you got an injury, you pretty much, kiss of death. I mean, today, they have ways. We have ways of healing, so.
Oh, exactly. And ancient life was hard on the body. It's, in fact, we think of stress today. If we're stuck in traffic and late for work, you feel stressed. But imagine pestilence and war and famine and plagues, It was much more stressful physically and mentally back in those days.
Okay, so really there's nothing we can learn from those who did not have a plaque. Do we know anything about if the pattern of plaque development is similar to what we see today? In other words, in what arteries and what peripheral veins or whatever?
It looks just like it does in modern times. When I show these pictures to radiologists or cardiologists who are used to looking at these types of CT scans, they say, oh, yeah, that's what it looks like. Well, the plaque, the calcium, for example, starts early where the aorta splits into the arteries to the legs, the aortic bifurcation. And we've got examples of mummies from all four of the cultures where there's calcium or plaque right there. We see it in the place in the carotid artery to the head that just where it shows up in modern people. So to us, it looks the same, and that's what's so remarkable about it. It's part of why we're confident that it is what we say it is.
Right, it has a signature. There's a lot of research going on in the area of orthomolecular interventions, and there is a couple really good studies out there that show that whole, complete natural forms of vitamin E, as well as certain things like omega-3 containing fish oils, can actually help the body both slow down plaque buildup and in some cases even reabsorb plaque buildup over time. Is it possible to take that information and overlay it on these mummies and and where they lived and say, well, clearly these people were deficient in something?
No, although as a practicing cardiologist, I agree with the fish oil statement, certainly. We've got a number of studies showing that for people who've had a heart attack, when they eat fish oil or take fish oil supplements, their outcome is better. They live longer. And so clearly that part of nutrition is as well established as anything is. We would like to get tissue and perhaps do some sample analysis. Maybe that kind of question could be answered. Maybe questions about genetics or questions about what was in the diet or whether they had diabetes. Maybe we can offer some insights there. So far, we've not been able to, but we're still hot on the trail.
So without tissue, a lot of these questions will go unanswered. I guess the only way to get tissue is to find a frozen mummification, right? If you can find something frozen.
No, the trouble with this taking the biopsies is that it's destructive. And so if someone's got a well-preserved mummy, the mummy's valuable. It's a valuable artifact, and we don't want to destroy it or cut into it too much. So we have to find a way to do it in a less invasive manner. Sometimes there are mummy body parts that are not on display, for example, and those are a little more appropriate for this kind of tissue analysis. They're not being used for other kind of scientific or museum purposes.
You know, that was one of the questions. When you decided to go on this hunt, if you will, to start to CT scan mummies, I have to believe that some of these cultures still hold on to some primitive beliefs about life after death and so on. Were you met with any resistance where people were like, no, we can't allow you to do that, that'll steal this spirit or something like that?
No, mostly because the mummies are so old. The Egyptian authorities were very forthcoming, very happy to have us do this kind of research. The personnel at the museum in Cairo, for example, are great scholars. They wanted this kind of investigation. They appreciated our doing it with them. They're wonderful collaborators also. And we were asked that question. We were asked, for a medical journal, you're supposed to get permission from next of kin. Well, that's a little tough when the mummy's 2,000 years old, but we did get permission from the Supreme Council of Antiquities. And in Peru, we had permission and the help of the cultural ministry. They believe this is important work, and it has insights onto the health and disease of people today because that's their ancestors.
So you've blown the lid off of this notion that arteriosclerosis is a modern disease, clearly. What's the next step for your group?
Well, we're hoping to expand our search. As you alluded to earlier, we'd like to get some more cultures. We'd like to look more broadly. And if we can get some tissue to answer some of the questions you were mentioning, we'd love to do that. We'd love to delve into this problem more deeply and see if we can find more insights as to exactly what the risk factors might have been in ancient times.
Yeah, because like we said earlier, I mean, if you could unlock this, why they were developing arteriosclerosis, then perhaps it would have a benefit today. I know that you said earlier that, you know, a lot of the standards of care today in heart disease management and treatment, seem to be working. There's lots of argument about that. There's good research coming out of high-level institutions that are saying now that, you know, statin drugs may not possess the value that we thought they did in keeping a second occurrence of a heart attack from occurring. And there's a lot of evidence now that is causing a lot of clinicians to go and rethink the whole cholesterol model. And do you think that what you have learned and what you will be learning in these ancient cultures could have any effect on how we look at cholesterol's role in plaque buildup?
Well, the initial role and the relative importance of risk factors, I think this does question. Now, what you said about cholesterol as a practicing cardiologist, I think almost all the cardiologists would say that, lowering the cholesterol for cardiac patients is important. We may have less control over this disease than some people think, but that doesn't mean that lowering the cholesterol is not beneficial, especially for our people that have disease or established disease or early disease or people that have cholesterol problems. Now, there was an advisory last year about a weak association of statin drugs with higher risk of diabetes and Alzheimer's, but it was fairly weak. And clearly, we've got 100,000 people that have been through clinical trials to show that there's a therapeutic benefit of forcing the cholesterol low in our patients. Now, what diet we should have people eat, I think that's a bit of an open question. What is the healthiest diet? Some are clearly healthier than others, but what's the best one? And how do you measure it?
The problem with the healthiest diet and the best diet comes to something that we were talking about earlier with Dr. Jean Jack Wang from Brookhaven National Lab, and that is, you know, there are polymorphisms. I remember when the Okinawan diet was all the rage, right? And so people were like, well, we have to eat like the Okinawans. No, only if your genetic makeup has evolved under the conditions at the Okinawans will you see a benefit from taking in the nutritional diet that they take in. The same thing about, you know, we're constantly trying to unlock the French paradox. Well, the French paradox may not be the wine. It may actually be the fact that the Europeans walk, 400 to 500% more than the Americans do. And we know that postprandial blood sugar levels respond to the same way that pharmacological interventions cause them to respond. When somebody gets up after a meal and stands, never mind walks. So the problem with this notion, you know, everybody's out there. I mean, I just saw a documentary. I didn't watch it. Something about the perfect human diet. There's no such thing. The perfect human diet is whatever your genetics evolved under. You need to. That's why I say it is important for us to look towards our ancestors for some of this. There clearly are people that can tolerate dairy. There are people that don't. We were talking about fish oil a second ago. Well, we know now that there's an allele out there, the APOE allele, that some people will not benefit from taking fish oil. In fact, it can actually cause problems. So this notion that we're going to find the perfect human diet is nonsense. What we need to do is we need to hearken back to earlier times. And I'm not saying this is going to make plaque go away, but we need to hearken back and we need to look at what we evolved under, what our ancestors evolved under, what access to what foods and so on, and start there and then kind of work our way from there. You know, that's my opinion. But then again, I'm not a scholar.
Well, we certainly ought to all exercise. I agree with that. And what dietary advice to give is a little bit of an open question. Some diets are healthier than others. We all ought to keep our caloric intake optimal, and we all ought to exercise. And
yes.
A very varied diet with fruits and vegetables obviously does have some proven benefit.
Yes. Yes.
Beyond that, it's a little bit speculative, as you're
yes,
saying.
Yes, yes. And that's because food isn't food anymore. Everything has changed. It's a very, very, I would not want to be a scientist today trying to find the answers to health and longevity. It's because there are so many variables. There's so many variables today that it's virtually impossible, in my humble opinion. Listen, Dr. Thompson, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show.
Well, thanks for having me.
And very, very intriguing stuff. Take care.
All right. You too. Bye-bye.
All right, so stay tuned. When we come back, I've got a couple things I want to talk about for the rest of the week. We've got some great shows planned. We'll be right back.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in Can-See eye drops. I've been using Can-See for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing. My near vision has improved, and I can read small print from 8 inches. My overall vision is clearer, and the glare from oncoming headlights doesn't bother me any longer. Just 1 to 2 drops a day, and the results are visible. You can find Can-See eye drops at wisechoicemedicine.net or call 800-861-4936. That's 800-861-4936. wisechoicemedicine.net. Can-See eye drops. The name says it all.
Whey Natural USA is the best whey protein in the world. Not only is it from Amish grass-fed cows inside the United States, but it's the only grass-fed whey in the world that is not heat pasteurized. Don't be fooled by other grass-fed whey products that are low heat pasteurized. Only the patented Chill-Rite process leaves all the natural fractions of whey intact to boost your immune system while building more muscle. And Whey Natural USA is also the lowest price for non-heat pasteurized grass-fed whey protein in the world. Don't waste your time.
time on products that only deliver 15 grams of protein per scoop, choose the best with 25 grams of protein per scoop. Whey Natural USA. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Whey Natural USA banner ad today to see why anything less is wasting your money.
Eat dessert again with the new 100% natural line of high-protein, low-carb Quest protein bars. I love lemon cream pie and strawberry cheesecake, but you can choose from chocolate peanut butter, coconut cashew, or cinnamon roll as well. No matter which one you try, you'll feel like you're eating dessert. But this is no ordinary dessert. With 20 grams of high-quality whey protein isolate, 17 grams of prebiotic fiber, and sweetened with stevia, these bars will make you feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest Protein Bar banner ad to learn more about these clean and delicious protein bars.
Whey Natural USA is the best whey protein in the world. Not only is it from Amish grass-fed cows inside the United States, but it's the only grass-fed whey in the world that is not heat pasteurized. Don't be fooled by other grass-fed whey products that are low heat pasteurized. Only the patented Chill-Rite process leaves all the natural fractions of whey intact to boost your immune system while building more muscle. And Whey Natural USA is also the lowest price for non-heat pasteurized grass-fed whey protein in the world. Don't waste your time on products that only deliver 15 grams of protein per scoop. Choose the best with 25 grams of protein per scoop. Whey Natural USA. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Whey Natural USA banner ad today to see why anything less is wasting your money. Superhuman Radio has the smartest and most dedicated health and fitness listeners found anywhere in the world. If you're trying to tap this market of greater than 50 million health fitness consumers, you simply can't do better than advertising on Superhuman Radio. Our sponsors tell us Superhuman Radio outperforms other forms of advertising time and time again. If you're tired of wasting valuable advertising dollars and need a new way to build your client base, go to superhumanradio.com and click on the Advertise with Us link. It just may be the best thing you have ever done for your business.
Thousands of Superhuman Radio listeners already know how well GLC 2000 works at repairing joints and cartilage, and it's the best price on the market, milligram for milligram. Now GLC Direct is offering a special that my listeners can take advantage of. Buy one, get one free of any GLC 2000 product. That's right. Buy one of your favorite GLC 2000 products and get one free. Capsules or raw powder. Just mention Superhuman Radio and buy one, get one free today. Call 866-452-3473 or click the GLC banner ad on superhumanradio.com. Offer limited to one per household.
Your radio just got ripped. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back.
Rap guys. They only talk to her because she's
okay.
Like a total prostitute.
Dr. Michael Smith will be joining us on Tuesday to talk about lots of things, including the war on health, misinformation that you're getting out there that may be making you or causing you not to trust some of the advice that you're getting about how well supplements work. Of course, we'll also have Rob Regish on tomorrow for the Blueprint Power Hour. Wednesday, we're doing a couple different really good topics. Thigh fat may be to blame for older adults who slow down. Plus, energy drinks may increase blood pressure and disturb heart rhythm. But is it just energy drinks? What about Starbucks? Where do they fall into? Then we will have on Thursday, of course, the Subversity Science Roundup. Preceding that, wearing knee wraps affects mechanical output and performance in the squat exercise. And of course, HDL and cholesterol, life after the divorce. How about that one? And then of course, this Friday, Casual Friday. We've got lots of good, we're getting emails from people in anticipation of Casual Friday. And I have a lot of things that I'm going to answer on Casual Friday. I want to thank everybody for listening today. Hope you got something good out of it. And we will be back tomorrow with more Superhuman Radio. Thank you for listening.
This is the Superhuman Channel, where we use oxygen for the power of good.
The following paid program does not...